minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Happy weekend. Your Saturday crew is here. I am Jason Perrone of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, Game On Wisconsin and the Quick Slants Podcast, along with Mark Eckel of Packer Report and Paul Brettel of Dairyland Express, Cheesehead TV, and the Packers Unrestricted Podcast. Gentlemen, we are halfway through the summer, which means it is hot outside, but as always, and we've got an audience to cater to, we've got to talk about the weather. So before we jump into our own weather, really cool. We got a tweet from Scott Cameron all the way in Scotland. Sent us a nice video with the weather update. I thought the background was very cool. Some sights from Scotland just kind of makes you realize how young and infant the United States of America are when you see some of these older buildings and structures from across the pond. But really nice video there. Thank you so much, Scott. I know that he is listening to us. And we also got another tweet from the European area nations. We got one from Oslo. Robin Erickson says the local temperature, which was about a 45-minute drive southeast of Oslo, hit 29 Celsius. If anybody wants to do the math, I'll let you guys do that. In fact, I'll just...
No, I want you to do that, Jason. I don't know that. I don't know how to do that.
Kick it over to 29 Celsius says it's 84.2 degrees Fahrenheit. All right.
That's nice weather.
That is nice weather. What's going on the East Coast, Mark? It's somewhat not full hurricane season, but what's happening on the East Coast?
Not a hurricane came and went. It was nothing. We're about 29 Celsius.
Okay.
Now that I know what that equals. Yeah, it's been nice, sunny. A couple of partly cloudy days, but you know, overall, I've been on the beach, so that's all that really matters.
Well, right, because someone's going to start looking for you if you're not on the beach.
Exactly. You're right. When it's funny that you say that. I live in a high rise. There's three towers, whatever. But you get to know the people that live here year round, which I'm one of only like 50 of us or so that live year round out of like 500 and some units. But you get to know the people that live here, obviously, because we see each other all year round. So a couple days in a row, I just had some things to do, whatever, some stories to write, where I wasn't on the beach like 2 days in a row. And I went back out the next day and everyone was like, oh, thank God. We didn't know if you were sick. We didn't know what, I'm like, I just took a couple days to do other things. Like, but they're actually worried about me. So yeah, right. I'm fine.
You're doing well. Well, you got to be the life of the party somewhere else sometimes, according to what...
You know, exactly. You can't go every day.
So if we're talking faster on this show, it's because Mark has somewhere to be, so...
No, we're good. We're good. We got a good show for us.
And all right. Well...
For our Scandinavian friends.
Scandinavian friends and our friends in Scotland. Yeah, and let's kick it over to what I refer to as the scene of the crime, because I'm a Phoenix Suns fan. The great state of Wisconsin and Green Bay, Wisconsin locale. Paul Brettel, what's going on in the summertime over there? How is Green Bay looking?
We had some storms roll through this week, but they weren't as strong as the weathermen had built it up to be. And that seems to be pretty typical, at least in Green Bay. I think just being on the water, maybe a little cooler. Storms are never as strong. But today, Saturday, 85, sunny. It's beautiful.
There you go.
Very, very nice. And no surprise here in the Phoenix locale. It's about 100 degrees and about 38 degrees Celsius. And but we have had some monsoon and some storms come through, some dust storms. Mark, you asked about sandstorms. It's not quite the Star Wars version of a sandstorm, but we have gotten some dusty stuff blowing around. We actually like the rain when it comes around because it is so dusty in the Phoenix area that when it rains, it kind of clears everything out. And you can actually see in the distance and see the mountains, and it's nice. So. Hot and sunny in the Phoenix area, no surprise there at all. Let's just get the big elephant in the room out of the way here. Since I know that most of our audience are Packers fans, I just want to congratulate the Milwaukee Bucks for coming back, making a series out of the NBA Finals, winning the two games at home like they should have, won the first one very convincingly. And we got a series, so it's a three-game series, essentially, kicking it back to Phoenix, and that game is actually tonight. So I'm glad we're recording before the game and not after. Otherwise, I might be a little bit more somber, according to the way I feel that things are going.
As a very objective person on this, because I guess put a gun to my head, I'm rooting for the Bucks, but you would have to put the gun to my head, because I don't dislike either team. I don't really root for either team. I want the Bucks to win only because before the season started, somebody said to me, "Who do you think is going to win the NBA this year?" And I said, "I think Milwaukee might." So I would look smart if Milwaukee won, I guess, which doesn't always happen. But as a totally objective person, I mean, it's not a series to the home team loses, right? The home team hasn't lost.
What they say.
I mean,
I guess
I know Phoenix fans are down. Oh my God, we had them 2-0 and 2-2. Well, you won at home and they won at home. If you keep winning at home, Phoenix is going to win a series.
Yep.
I won't be surprised if it goes 7 games. I'll just say this. I tweeted it out earlier today, and guys, I know we're on a time crunch and it's not a basketball show, but this is a special occasion where you've got two teams that haven't been in the finals in a long time, and they're both quieting all the critics who talk about no super team in the finals and how it's not going to be as exciting. I don't think these 4 games could have been any better so far, and I think the rest of the series is only going to top what we've already seen. But I'll just say this. The Bucks have been on the doorstep for the past 2 seasons. They kind of got derailed last year with COVID, as so did many other teams. But I honestly think Milwaukee was destined to be in the represent the East of the finals, and it just didn't work out when they went into the bubble. And then this season, here they are. Finally, they make the finals, and they have figured it out. They've made adjustments. Giannis is absolutely playing like an MVP. He's in the conversation now for the best in the game. I mean, how can you argue that he's at least in the conversation? You might not agree that he is, but he's been so good. And it just seems like he's able to will this team to do whatever it is that he wants to do, and whatever he needs to do, they just go and take it. So as a Suns fan, I definitely see the Suns on their heels a little bit. And I'll be really interested to see how they come out once they come back at home on Saturday. Paul, I should probably give you at least a minute or two to rebut, if you want to rebut what you've seen. You've got to be on a high, though. The Bucks have won 2 in a row.
I absolutely am. The one thing I'll say is the big thing that I'm just focusing on is enjoying every single moment of this, even the losses. The Bucks have been close in the past to getting to this point. 2019, they didn't. And then as a Packers fan, back when the Green Bay won the Super Bowl with Rodgers, you know, I was 19 at the time, would have bet a lot of money, everything I had, which wasn't much, that they would have been back by this time, and they haven't. And while the Bucks still have their core under contract for the coming years, we don't know whether they'll be back or not. So big thing I'm just trying to do is just enjoy every moment of this, because it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a great approach to take, and that's a good lesson for Packers fans. It's painful, and they've painfully not gotten to the Super Bowl, because there's been a couple times where I think they should have. So I guess that's what we should talk about, is the Green Bay Packers, because this is a Green Bay Packers show. So last week, Paul, you took us through some of your...
I thought this was a weather show.
It is a weather show first, then...
They come for the weather, and they hang around here.
Hang around for the football talk. Well, last week, Paul guided us through his top questions on offense for the Green Bay Packers. This week, we're kicking it over to the defensive side of the ball. So, Paul, without any further ado, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Jason. Let's dive in with cornerback. So the basis of these questions are focused around training camp, preseason, you know, who's going to emerge during that time frame. So Jair Alexander's cornerback 1, but there's big discussion, a battle, camp battle. It's going to take place for cornerback 2 between Kevin King and Eric Stokes. And the cornerback 2, cornerback 3 slogan, or whatever the correct verbiage is a little... you know, misrepresentative of how it's going to happen, just because if King's cornerback 2, it's not going to be an Eric Stokes is on the sidelines. Both are going to see playing time. But I guess the question that I'll ask each of you is, who do you think is going to take the most snaps come week 1? Kevin King or Eric Stokes? Jason, we'll start with you.
Ooh, coming right out of the gate hot. I mean, if we're talking about week 1, I'm going to go with Kevin King, only because if we're talking about the first week, I mean, by the end of the season, I hope the answer changes, honestly. But I think Kevin King will be that guy in week 1, unless there's an injury. And then it's hopefully Stokes is ready. But I think you bring him along slowly. Corner's one of those positions. And I don't know, Mark, you may correct me if I'm wrong when you're giving your take on this. But corner's one of those positions where it's a tough transition from college to the NFL. There's just the speed of the game. The offenses are different. The skill sets of the receivers. You've seen Davante Adams, the number one wide receiver in the NFL, by the way, as voted by coaches and players, I believe, in some way, shape, or form. You guys can correct me on that if I'm wrong. But the footwork is phenomenal. These are pros. They're getting paid to do it. It's their job. It's their livelihood. The competition level is really high. So as much as Kevin King has drawn the ire of some fans for some of his play over the years and the injuries and some of that history that he has, he's still the safest bet at corner opposite Jair or whoever's going to play the other outside spot if they're going to move Jair around. And then that's going to create other questions. So if it's, you know, I'm kind of taking the cheap and easy way out to in answering your question very literally, Paul, but I don't see any way that you throw Stokes out there unless he just lights the world on fire in training camp, in which case there's probably been a lot of Twitter refreshing going on, as Mark loves to remind us about, during training camp with the reports from the beat writers that he's just tearing the world up, and that would be great. I just don't necessarily see it happening at one of the premier positions in the NFL.
How about you, Mark? We know how much you love Eric Stokes.
Yes, I'm the you're right, I do. Since, I mean, you worded it in week one, and I have to agree with Jason that, yeah, I mean, I'm going to begrudgingly say that, yes, Kevin King will get more, not a lot more, but he'll get more snaps week one than Eric Stokes will. Now, if you would have said the first month of the season or up until the bye week or whatever, for the length, I mean, it's only a matter, in my opinion, and I could be wrong. And actually, I hope I am wrong, because that means King's playing really well. But I think it's only a matter of time before Eric Stokes unseats Kevin King as cornerback two. I'm a big Stokes fan. I think he's that speed is unquestioned. But I also think he's around the ball. He makes plays. I really like the guy. I thought it was a great pick. Now, we talked, and I don't want to give away another question maybe, but we have talked in the past about how I think Joe Barry is going to find a way to get Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and Rashawn Gary all on the field at the same time. But I think he'll also find a way, if King is playing at his best, which is when he's at his best, he's pretty darn good. And if Stokes is what I think he is, and obviously what the Packers think he is, because they took him in the first round, and of course you have Alexander, if I think he'll find a way to get all three of those guys on the field at the same time as well, whether it's making Alexander the quote-unquote star position or you want your best players on the field. And I think both King and Stokes are two of the Packers' best 11 players. So somehow, some way, I think they're all three are going to play. But to answer your question the way it was asked, week one, I'm going to say King will have a few more snaps than Stokes.
I agree with both of you on that, just for the experience that Kevin King has over Stokes. And I know we all remember the NFC Championship game, but that's not how Kevin King's career has gone in Green Bay. There's been plenty of good moments as well. And as we talked about last week, I believe, under Brian Gutekunst, if he has the opportunity to, he likes to be able to bring rookies along slowly. 2018, when Jair popped into the league, you know, those first few weeks, he was still on the field a good amount, 60-70% of the snaps, but it wasn't until he came back from injury week 7, week 8, whenever that was, that he was on the field for 100% of them. They were still leaning a little bit more on Tremont Williams, Devon House at this time. So I tend to think we'll see a similar approach with Eric Stokes. But like any of these questions, anything that we're discussing, training camp, preseason, it's going to be a litmus test and the ultimate decision maker, because performance is king. All right, next question. We move to the interior defensive line. So we've talked about it on here. TJ Slayton, I think we're all big fans of that selection and what that could mean for this defensive front, particularly Kenny Clark, who wrote about it over at Chiefs at TV as well recently. But under Mike Patton, Kenny Clark played a majority of his snaps at nose tackle. And basically the reason was because he was the only one who could do so. The nose tackle is a position that it's there to occupy space, take on double teams, and really their presence is typically felt by their teammates more than what you see in the stat sheet. However, Clark is a different animal, and he still put up sacks, pressures, because he's just that good. Hopefully, my hope anyways, and I'm sure everyone else's, addition to TJ Slayton will allow Clark to move outside to that four tech in Joe Barry's defense, give him more one-on-one opportunities. But that's also reliant on TJ Slayton, who is a fifth-round rookie, being someone that they can rely on in that role, or someone like Tyler Lancaster stepping up and getting more snaps there. So as the season, or I guess early on, or as the season progresses, Mark, do you see Kenny Clark taking on a larger role playing, or a different role, I should say, playing more outside? Or do you think, because of who else is still on the defensive line, you know, for that nose tackle position specifically, which is a lot of unknowns, Slayton, Lancaster, Lowry, do you think he's still going to end up at the nose just because that's basically what they have to do?
I think, I don't want to hedge, but a little bit of both. I don't think he will never play the nose again. I mean, they'll, right, they'll be down in distance where he's on the nose. But no, I think without a doubt, the plan is to move him around, to create mismatches for him, to get him where he's not double teamed, and then watch out. Because you guys know, I mean, when we had our thing a couple weeks ago on who our favorite Packers are, you know, Kenny Clark's my favorite current Packer. And I just think he's so good and so underrated. And watch, I mean, if Joe Barry uses him the way I've read and think he's going to use him, you're going to see big numbers from Kenny Clark. I'm not going to say he's Aaron Donald, because Aaron Donald's kind of in a league of his own right now when it comes to the defensive linemen. But that's what Joe Barry's going to want Kenny Clark to be, his Aaron Donald, where he'll move him, he'll find places for him. And I think that's why they drafted T.J. Slayton, obviously. They want, you know, it is tough on a rookie, but you're not going to ask Slayton to be, you know, a star by any means, or to even, you know, just go out there and be a big guy, take up some room, take up some blockers, you know, be that traffic cop, you know. And I think he'll be fine at that. And Lancaster, see, I thought Lancaster was also misplaced as an end in the 3-4, which he's done the last couple of years. He's a nose tackle. That's what he was too. I mean, so I think, I hope, between Slayton and Lancaster, they can fill that nose tackle role. And then you can move Clark around, and then you know, Lowry does what he does, and then you have Kiki as well. I wrote a story last week saying that, you know, this defensive line is better than you think, and that's all the reasons why. So to answer the original question, yes. I don't think Kenny Clark will never play nose tackle again. I think he'll get some snaps at nose tackle. But no, I definitely think he's going to be utilized in a lot of different roles. And again, against different teams, I think it will determine on the opposition. If the opposition's weakest player is the center, then by all means line Kenny up over to center and let him dominate. But if a team has a good center, put him up, you know, put him over the left guard or the right guard, wherever the weakness is, and let him just go wild.
Jason, feel free to answer that question as well, but with a little bit more holistic approach, what are your expectations in general for the defensive front?
So that's kind of where I was going to go with it, because I think what's going to happen with Kenny Clark is going to also depend on the productivity and the health of the guys up front with him. So, I mean, you can't ever necessarily know if an injury is going to happen. You can plan for it, but you never know if one's going to happen. And so if you've got a deficiency up front, for example, if Kingsley Keke isn't able to play more in the middle or next to Kenny Clark, then Clark may have to be where he's at, and he may have to stay more stationary throughout the game. But these comparisons to what Aaron Donald does, and I caution against that, because Donald is a very, very special and unique talent up front. I think they're both considered defensive tackles, but I still have a hard time comparing the two of them because they're just such different types of players. But you got to put, if you're a team that just went 13-3 2 years in a row, you're on the doorstep of a championship appearance, and you're literally, you know, trying to make any tweak that you can to make your team better, you have to do this. You have to move Kenny Clark around. You have to try to put players in the best position to make plays and succeed. I like what Mark said, take advantage of the weaknesses across from them. I am hoping that, I mean, Kenny Clark's going to make plays, but if you want him to have a phenomenal season that we talk about for a long, long time, then we have to hope for a healthy Kingsley Keke and Dean Lowry, Tyler Lancaster doing his part, those three playing the appropriate number of snaps, as I've said several times, not playing too many snaps. And then Slayton, as a rookie mid-round pick, he's easy to get excited about because he's got great size. We just don't know how he's going to pan out and if he's going to play much. I've been burned before getting too excited about a rookie, and then they get buried on the depth chart or they're inactive on game day. So I think that's a perfect way to phrase it, Paul, is what's the expectation? My expectation is Kenny Clark is going to show up and he's going to ball out every week that he possibly can. We got a real gem in him because he's dedicated to the team. He works hard. He wants to be great. And he's bought into the culture of this defense and trying to make it a championship level defense. Now everyone else just around him just needs to, you know, it's another basketball parallel. You know, if Giannis throws down 42 like he did in game two, but no one else is shooting the ball well, it's not going to be the same result as it's been the last couple games mm-hmm. when he's been able to put those numbers up. So if everyone else can do their part, I think Kenny Clark is primed to be a huge part of it. And I want him motivated. I want these guys hungry. I want guys like Clark, Jair on the defense. Savage is that guy. Amos now too. That have been so close enough that they're like, look, we have to have the want to inside of us now, and we have to come out fired up, and we've got to be ready to do it, and we have to be ready to go on every single snap. No taking plays off. You know, this isn't the Randy Moss thing where we're so great and elite that we can take some plays off and still put up great numbers and help our team win. I just the greater part of the whole is going to make everybody better. When you have an elite talent like Kenny Clark, if the greater part of the whole is really good, Kenny Clark's going to stand out. We're going to be talking about him a lot in what he did in 2021 when it's over.
For sure. And also be interesting to see as well how often we see, I think, Mark, you mentioned this already, the Smiths and Gary on the field as well at the same time, because obviously that's going to change the defensive alignment as well.
If you have Zadarius and or Gary putting their hand on the ground in a four-man front, that's going to do different things. That's going to, you know, Kenny, that changes his position a little bit, but it'll also give the other guys, as Jason pointed out, you don't want those guys out there too much. I think that's what happens sometimes. You overplay a Dean Lowry or you overplay a Tyler Lancaster. Sometimes you get better results from less snaps because they're, you know, you get worn down a little bit. So I wrote it and I believe it. I think this Packer defensive line is better than a lot of people think.
I was going to bounce to cornerback, but we'll stay along the defensive front since we kind of are discussing it already in the edge rusher position. So something that hasn't been discussed about very much this offseason, I find really intriguing, is going to be the snap count between Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary and how they balance that. You know, last year, and I know Gary missed some time, but by snap count, Preston Smith pretty much doubled what Gary did in terms of playing time last year. However, as you all know, pressures, sacks, Gary was by far the more impactful, efficient pass rusher than what Preston Smith was. And I even went back and looked at like individual games, you know, as the season progressed and we saw that Smith was struggling and Gary was ascending, did their snap counts really change? And they didn't. For the most part, even by week 17, the end of the year, Preston Smith was still on the field for basically most of the defensive snaps, 60, 70 of them. Rashawn Gary was in the 40-ish range or so. So rewind to this past offseason, we thought Preston Smith was going to be cut. Rashawn Gary would have stepped into edge rusher two role. So I think it's a really interesting question what that balance is going to end up being like. And we've already talked about the three of them will share the field as well this season, just as they did under Mike Pettine. Will it be more? Will it be less? How will Barry utilize it? That's another one of those questions out there. And we aren't going to have the answer to this, obviously. I know this is focused on training camp, but this is something we're not going to know until we get a month, 2 months into the season. But, Mark, do you have any sort of guess, thoughts on how Barry might go about, we know Zadarius is going to see his fair share of snaps, as he should, but how they're going to go about dividing that time between Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary? Because Rashawn Gary's earned his playing time. He's entering year three, a big year, seems poised for another step forward. You don't want to stunt that growth and keep him on the, you know, on the field for 35, 40 snaps when he could be out there for 50, 60. So how do you envision that playing out?
I think, yeah, I'm with you. I think Gary will get, I don't want to put a number on it, but
right.
I think Zadarius obviously will get the most snaps of the outside rushers. But I think Gary will get second. Preston will get third. But I, like I said before, I think, you know, you don't want Zadarius playing, you know, 98% of the snaps either. So there'll be times when he gets a, you know, a series off just because, you know, give him a little break, and then you could have Preston and Gary both out there. So that'll get both of them a little more snaps. And then again, I think there'll be times when you put their hand on the ground with either Gary hands of Darius or one or the two, and Preston will be out there. So to answer your, I mean, I'm beating around the bush a little bit, but I just think they'll all, I think in order of snap counts, it'll be Zadarius, Gary, Preston. But I think they'll all be out there more. I think all three might get more than 50% of the snaps, though. I really do. I think, like I said before, you want your best players on the field. I don't think the Packers have a better 11 players better than Preston Smith. So, and again, a lot will be determined on how the game's going. Mm-hmm. If the Packers have the lead and the other team has to throw, well, yeah, they're all three are going to be out there because you want your best pass rushers out there. So you'll have an extra D back. Your linebackers won't be out there. You'll have pass rushers and you'll have D backs because you're up 21-3 in the third quarter or whatever, hopefully. So that will, now if it's not that kind of game, then it changes some things a little bit. Maybe if you're losing or, and the team's going to run the ball more, then you're going to go with more run stoppers. So, but in a perfect, the Packers, this is a good team. Let's be honest. I don't care what anybody says. I think they're just as good as last year, maybe better even, depending on how things shake out. But getting back to your original point, I gave you the order, but I think all three will play a lot. That's the bottom line.
How about you, Jason? What are your expectations?
Well, I'll put a little different spin on the answer and just say that I would love by the end of the season. Now, I don't want it to be because Zadarius Smith is falling out or falling off, I should say, or there's an issue with effort, which there isn't with Zadarius Smith. But wouldn't it be perfect and awesome if Rashawn Gary is the guy that's getting the most snaps because the torch is kind of passed. He's working his tail off right now, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have a great season. But for the 12th overall pick, who had many of us, I don't know if either the two of you were scratching our heads when that pick was made a couple years ago, to become the guy after the last two seasons that Zadarius Smith has had. Now, he wasn't as good in 20 as he was in 19. Neither was Preston Smith. They both had a phenomenal 2019. But for Rashawn Gary to overtake him and be the man as the pass rusher and be the future of the pass rush, that would be awesome. That's what I kind of hope happens. But you have to assume that Zadarius is going to get the bulk of those snaps. And as long as we don't see Preston Smith trying to cover any receivers, I think we should be okay. Joe Barry's got, we all talk about players and what the players are going to be and rookies and how they're going to fit in and have all these conversations. We probably should do a show before we have a lot of football to talk about and we can't fit it in anymore. We probably should talk about Joe Barry and what the expectations are there. Now, that's going to require some deep dive and digging and looking into what he's done in the past. And he's got kind of a checkered past with where he's been before. Mark, you saw a little bit up and close when he was with Washington. So I don't know what it's going to look like with Green Bay. I just hope that he's utilizing the combinations as effectively. It kind of goes back to your last question about Kenny Clark. To me, the snap count doesn't matter. Just put the best 11 guys out there and let them eat and let them get after the quarterback and cover and do whatever it is that they do. And they've got, Mark, I'm with you too. I get more excited every time we do these shows. So I think about the defense specifically. I think I take the offense for granted because of how it's structured and how well they do. But the defense is what's really got me excited, because I think that's going to be the key this season to, and especially starting hot, is catch some of those interceptions, get some of those turnovers early, make it difficult on other teams. Don't let them dictate what's going on. Don't let the same things continue to get them, the swing routes, the toss runs where the running backs get to the edge. You got Dalvin Cook twice a year, like all those things. I think the defense is going to be primed to do really well. But Rashawn Gary, it's because of the ascension of some of these young guys, draft and develop. Jair, Darnell Savage, Rashawn Gary, and then you throw in the veterans like Zadarius, Kenny Clark have been there for a while. This defense is I get more excited the more that we talk about it. So I guess my answer is I don't care, put the best guys out there, but I hope that Rashawn Gary surprises us and becomes that guy.
I think one differentiator too could be Gary, at least last year, and I know Smith was had a down year, but he showed that he was a much better defender against the run. So maybe he's the guy who's out there on the early downs. Just something to keep our eyes on. So let's bounce back to the cornerback position. We know CB2 is a battle, but we're also wondering who's going to be that star, slot, nickel, whatever buzzword you like to use. So Jerry Gray, the defensive backs coach during OTAs or mini camp, said that right now there's four or five guys that they're looking at for that position. He said by the end of preseason, they hope to be down to one or two. So Jason, the question is, who do you think might be that one or two for high school? Wow, I said that really weird. That first or second guy that they lean on early on in the season in the slot.
So earlier I kind of hedged a little bit because I said, who's going to be outside if they move Jair inside? So are they going to do that? Because I have to wonder if there isn't some tinkering going on there where you want Jair matched up against the whoever the ace is, because if the other team is smart, they're going to move that guy around. Davante Adams doesn't just line up outside. He moves around so he can get a favorable matchup and he can burn whoever it is that's covering him. Now, he can burn pretty much anybody. If he's covered in a phone booth, he gets open, all those cliches. But I guess I kind of go back to the first question, and if Kevin King is your starter outside, unless Stokes really lights it up in camp, and again, I just don't know that it happens right away, I think it's still Chandon Sullivan to start the season, and I'm not upset about it. I think that I'd like to see him in more of a dime role because his speed just isn't great, and I want to get Stokes on the field because that speed is so helpful, especially when you're in these big playoff games and you're playing against elite talent, and speed tends to be very prevalent in the playoffs. So I think it's Chandon to start, but I think we're going to see a lot of movement. I don't think you're going to put Jair like they did with Richard Sherman back in the Legion of Boom days in Seattle, where he was always on the left side and that was it. He just stayed there and it didn't matter where anybody else went. So I think it's Chandon to start, but then it gets interesting because if Stokes gets on the field, and maybe a question to bounce back to you guys is Stokes he a more prototypical outside guy or is he more of a slot guy? If he gets on the field, what's his best chance to get on the field? Is it outside or is it inside?
Mark?
What am I answering first?
Answer Jason.
As the president of the Eric Stokes fan club, let me start by saying that boy could play anywhere he wants. Uh-huh. Okay, he can play inside, outside. He'll take the guy. Whoever he's covering isn't going to catch any passes. All right, so just match him up against whoever you want, and that guy's going to want to go home. So that's how we feel over here at the Stokes fan club. now, I think Stokes' best position is outside, but I think he can certainly play inside if he has to. But to answer the original question, I think Darnell Savage is going to be the star.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think
he was really good there.
Yeah, I mean he showed last year some of the things he can do in coverage. And again, I'm going to go back to what I said about the defensive line. You want your best players on the field, and you want your best players in positions where they can make plays. Savage has become one of the best players. So, and everyone says, well, who's going to play safety? Well, you could go. I mean, if you have, five D-backs out there, whatever, you'll find a way. You can mix and match the different guys. But apparently the quote-unquote star position is an important position in Barry's defense. Now, we haven't seen it. I'll be honest. I saw the Rams maybe twice last year, so I don't know exactly how that works. But Jalen Ramsey did it sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he wants a good player there. So nothing against Sullivan, but I don't usually use Sullivan and the word star in the same sentence. So I I like Sullivan. He's an undrafted guy that's made the most of his talents. But I'm going to be a little leery if he's playing that position. I think Alexander maybe, and then you put the other guys outside. That I wouldn't be upset with that. But I really do think, to answer your original question, I think you're going to see Savage in that role more than anybody else.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was looking it up on Pro Football Focus. There were a number of stats from the slot. So receptions, you know, average targets per reception, snaps per reception, things like that. And out of both safeties and cornerbacks, when specifically playing the slot, Darnell Savage ranked in the top 10 in a few of those categories last year. He was really, really good. And I also think we're going to see Jair there more as well. Jalen Ramsey, you know, we're all making the assumption, I think it's a safe one, that what Joe Barry did is going to be similar to what the Rams did last year. And Jalen Ramsey followed the opponent's number one receiver quite a bit more than what he had in the past. And so, like Jason said, that's going to take you to the slot on occasions. So he went from taking like 70 snaps in the slot in 2019 to almost 200 last year. Jair, I think, was in 30 or 40 range in terms of snaps in the slot. So I think just if Barry uses Jair in a similar fashion, which I don't see why he wouldn't, he's terrific, as we all know, he's going to end up more there as well. So I think they have terrific options. And you guys keep both going back to the same excellent point, which is put your best players, put your playmakers on the field. And as we saw from Darnell Savage, the closer that man is to the line of scrimmage, the more big plays happen. All right. So next we're going to bounce to linebacker. So we'll switch up this a little bit. I'll give you my thoughts on it. You guys tell me whether you think I'm on the right track or if I'm just way, way off. So I don't think – this isn't breaking news. I don't think this linebacker unit's going to be elite. I don't think it's going to be one of the top units in the league. But I do think that they can be pretty good. I like Chris Barnes. I like Kamal Martin, what they bring in upside. If they can take that step forward in year two that so many successful NFL players make – as we all know, I've talked about it on this podcast, even before they signed Devondre Campbell, as a big fan of his. He's not spectacular in any one area, but he's durable. He's played 48 games the last four seasons out of 48 games. He's a reliable tackler, solid in coverage. You know, it's not a strength, but it's not a super weakness either for him. He can hold his own. He's capable. And then he's a capable blitzer as well. So I just like that well-roundedness, that experience, that durability that he brings to this young linebacker unit with Chris Barnes, who is steady. Kamal Martin is just a big play waiting to happen. And then in this Joe Barry defense, and I know I've referenced it before, but Ross Uglum's article at Cheesehead TV in their draft guide, he made note that the Joe Barry defense does a very, very good job of keeping the linebackers clean, which gives them the opportunity to make more plays. So for those reasons, Joe Barry's defense is more linebacker friendly than what Pettine's was. The upside, the potential that Chris Barnes, Kamal Martin has, and then the steadiness, the experience, the well-rounded game of Devondre Campbell. I think that this can be a more productive, maybe I'll say much more productive, linebacker unit than what we're used to seeing in Green Bay. Again, not saying they're going to be tops in the league by any means, but I think this can be a much more productive unit than what we've seen in the past. Jason, do you think that's fair to say, or am I reaching? Do I got my green and yellow rose-colored glasses on?
No.
If they max out, they can absolutely be really good. I just kind of feel the same way that I did when I mentioned TJ Slayton. And that's these aren't rookies, but just I've been burned before thinking that finally the Packers had an inside linebacker. Finally the Packers had inside linebackers, and it just doesn't happen. Campbell seems to be the type of guy that is going to give some veteran presence and bring some more talent to the inside linebacker position. But we've also seen guys come in and all of a sudden, for some reason, they just can't carve out a role on defense. So we'll see. I mean, it's that position is one of the more intriguing ones because of how many sub packages the Packers use, and they bring in extra defensive backs, and then you've got the dime, you've got the linebacker safety combo. Now Raven Green isn't on the roster anymore, so who's going to take on that role? Is that even going to be a role in Joe Barry's defense, or are we going to see more of the inside linebackers? Because if the light bulb goes off for Kamal Martin, he seems like the type that the Packers might not have to reach for a safety linebacker combo. They can actually rely on him on passing downs because he can get the job done. So kind of like a Devin White, but not to that level. Devin White's very good, but I think they can. They have the players, they have the talent. Chris Barnes, the biggest issue with him is health. I think we have to just go into this season expecting that he's going to play most games, but he's only going to play half the game because he's in and out all the time. And that's just, some guys just have that luck with regards to injuries and health. But that's another reason why. There's just, if you look at every area of this defense, even though there's not a lot of experience and this area has let us down before and they've just never really flashed, they still have a lot to be excited about, enough to the point where you're asking the question, Paul. I mean, it was a topic of your article. So there's enough there that if they do max out, it could be a really surprising thing. And we could, you know, we could be saying at the end of the season, you know, gosh, remember back in July when we were talking about our biggest, you know, surprises or questions about the Packers and we didn't know how this inside linebacker group was going to look. And all of a sudden they're lighting the world on fire. I guess we'll see. We'll see. But they definitely have, there's no shortage of talent. And I think health is going to be the biggest key because Martin had some injury issues too. If they all stay healthy, I think they're going to be big contributors. And if Joe Barry's biggest problem is trying to find ways to get the best 11 guys on the field because he's got 15 really good 11 guys, as I'll call it, then the Packers are going to be in pretty good shape.
How about you, Mark? Am I fair or foul with that thought?
No, very fair. I was ready to jump in, and then Jason, in his closing, said what I was going to say. It's about health, and that's why I like the Campbell signing almost as much as you did, and that he's going to play. He doesn't. I mean, you know, and listen, it's football. Anybody can get hurt, but his history tells you he plays all 16 games, he's very durable. That's not the case with Martin and Barnes. I mean, Martin, I love that pick when they made it. I think I wrote a story a year ago saying I thought he would be the most productive rookie last year because you knew Love wasn't going to play, and you knew Dylan wasn't going to play, you know, Dylan wasn't going to play much. And he didn't. I thought the Martin pick was a very good pick. And he fell in the draft because of injury issues. You know, he was hurt in college. And then he got hurt in camp last year. So, I mean, he has to stay healthy. He's the man out there. He plays with reckless abandon. He has to kind of tone it down a little bit, I think, just to kind of – he's sometimes –
almost out of control.
Yeah, he's like that, you know – he over pursued plays and gets himself in trouble a little bit, but that's a rookie. I mean,
that's what I was going to say. You know, young players do that a lot.
Savage do that quite a bit his rookie year.
Right. So, yeah, I like Barnes. I'll be honest. I didn't know much about him at all as an undrafted guy. I mean, they brought him in. I thought he was just okay. You know, he's going to try to make the team, play special teams or something. He was the most pleasant surprise of the season. Yes, he did. As Jason pointed out, he did have some weird injuries with the broken hand and all that kind of stuff. But when he played well.
Yeah, he's the green dot.
Yeah. Well, he's the smart. Yeah, he's definitely like the brains of the operation. I mean, are they going to be stars? No, they're not. You know, but this might be the best trio of inside linebackers the Packers have had since, I don't know, take me back to, I don't know, Barnett, maybe?
Yeah, Barnett and Dez Bishop.
Yeah, and I guess AJ Hawk was in that mix too, still, right? So it's been a while since they've had, and like I said, Campbell's they signed Kirksey last year, and I'll be honest, I wasn't, when they were bringing him in, I'm like, oh, well, that's like a backup guy, right? He's not going to be a starter. And then, no, he was a starter, and everybody, and then I talked myself into thinking he's better than he really was, and he really and he wasn't. He's a backup. I think Campbell's better than that, and he's not bad in coverage. You know, I know these people do these analytics, and you know, oh, he wasn't good in coverage last year. I talked to writers that covered him last year in Arizona, and even in Atlanta. No, Arizona didn't use him properly. Like, he can cover a tight end, and he'll do a great job. Now, they start putting him on wide receivers. No, that's not what inside linebackers aren't supposed to cover wide receiver. That's what your corners are for. That's what your nickels are for. That's what even a safety maybe. No, put him on a tight end, and he'll be fine. And that's, the Packers have had trouble with tight ends over the years. So I think Campbell will solve a lot of that problem. I think he'll be very, very good in coverage against tight ends. And he can blitz a little bit, like you said, too. So, I mean, Joe, I envy Joe. I'm sure there's a lot of coordinators in this league that envy Joe Barry having the
absolutely.
Pass rushers. Because let's be honest, in today's NFL, it's all about passing and stopping the pass, right? I mean, so you want a great quarterback, but you also want great pass rushers. Well, the Packers have more than most. With the three that we just talked about earlier, throw Kenny Clark in there, throw Kingsley Kiki in there. Now you throw a Campbell maybe coming on an inside blitz. I'm sure that there's a lot of coordinators that say, man, I wish I was Joe Barry. I wish I had all those pass rushers. So, and then even some of the safeties come blitz. Like you said, Savage, Amos come, they come on safety blitzes at times. So, yeah, I think inside linebackers, again, if you grade it from the best position on a team to the worst, yeah, they're closer to the worst, but only because the other positions are so darn good. So, yeah, I think they're better than they've been. I'll say that.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to see Campbell in action. I wrote an article about the Packers signing him before they signed Christian Kirksey, so he's been on my radar.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I gave you credit. I mean, I was hoping for a trade for Jordan Hicks. Mainly because I know Jordan. I've dealt with him for years. I he's a great guy off the field, and I think he's a good player on the field, but this didn't cost him anything. Hicks would have had to give up a pick or a player or something. And they got Campbell as a free agent, which I didn't realize that he only signed a 1-year deal with the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or that avoided, I guess, or something. I don't know, but because I liked him the year prior too, when he was a free agent coming from the Falcons, he was a guy like you, Paul. I thought that would have been a good signing.
Yep, absolutely. And it's like anything. It's what your expectations are. My expectation is going to be he's going to come in and be a dominant, one of the top linebackers in football. But compared to what the Packers have had in the past, his skill set.
He's better than Oren. Better than Oren Burks.
Yep, he is.
And Summers and Kirksey, for that matter,
Yep, absolutely. All right, so to our last question, and I understand this can be a tough one. It centers around Joe Barry and the defense. So I'll just leave it open-ended. You guys take it where you want to go. The way I phrased it in the article was, what can we expect from the Joe Barry defense? So, Mark, what can we expect? What is success to you? What do you hope to see? What do you think we'll see? You take it wherever you want to go with it. But what are your thoughts on heading into camp, the preseason, early on in the regular season, about this Joe Barry defense and expectations, success, whatever you, wherever you want to go with it?
I don't know about the Joe Barry. I still don't really know what I want to see Joe Barry, but the Green Bay Packers defense, I think, is going to be very good. Like I just said a couple minutes ago, I think there's a lot of coordinators who envy Joe Barry because of the pass rushers that he has. I mean, you have Za'Darius and Preston and then Rashawn Gary. That's three guys that could give you double-digit sacks. It wouldn't be a stretch. I mean, Za'Darius, unless he has it all. I mean, he's gotten them. Every year he's been in Green Bay, he's gotten double-digit sacks. Preston showed you that he could. Gary's like, as Jason pointed out, might become the best of the three or, be on the field the most of the three. So that's three guys that can give you a lot of sacks. And we talked about the defensive line. I think it's better than most people do. I think, moving Kenny Clark around is going to just cause all kind of havoc on the offensive lines. I expect Kingsley Kiki. He was just starting to come on last year. He had the concussion, knocked him out, took him away. He didn't play in near the end of the year in the playoffs. I think he's going to be, again, not a great player, but a good interior pass rusher. We just talked about the linebackers. I think they're better than they've been. Now you got the secondary. They're starting four, whether it's King or Stokes, with Alexander, Amos, and Savage. There might be a better starting four in the league. I'm not going to say they're the best. I'd have to look through everything. There aren't many better. There aren't many better because Alexander is a top two or three corner in the league. Savage and Amos are probably the best safety tandem in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Now depth comes in a little bit. Maybe we got to see about the Sullivan and the kid they drafted from App State. John Charles. Is that it, John Charles?
Yeah, Gene Charles, I think.
Yeah. But this defense, I'm telling you, I think it could be as good as the Packers defense has been in a long, long time. Maybe, going back to when they last time they won the Super Bowl, that defense was very good. it could be on that level. It really could. I don't look at it and say, well, they're really weak here. Like I said, if inside linebacker is their worst spot, which it probably is, but it's not that bad. It really isn't. I mean, you have two young guys that might really turn into something and a veteran who's very solid. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very, very excited and encouraged by what I see of this defense. And it's a good mix of youth and experience, too, because there's no real old guy on it. But you have a Kenny Clark who's still young because he came out when he was like 12 or something. I don't know. he's in his whatever year, but he's still very young. I guess who is the oldest guy on the defense?
I was gonna say Amos or Z, I think, are 28.
That's young.
Yeah.
Lowry might be that. How old's Lowry? He's probably about 28 too, I guess, right? Maybe 29.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I mean, it's a young defense, but it's also got experience. And I think I don't see any downsides. Like I know J.J. Watt was a big talk, but you know, months ago when he was, let's be honest, J.J. Watt is on the downside of his career. He's still maybe good, but he's not what he was. I don't think there's a guy on the Packer defense that you can say is on the downside. I mean, they're all just getting better. Even Zadarius, who's, you know, he's had his look at him his last two years. He's put up monster numbers since he came to Green Bay from Baltimore. Maybe Preston after last year, you can say is slipping, but I think, you know, from what I've read and heard, you know, he came into camp and last year he came to camp out of shape. I mean, let's just face it. That's what it was. And it played on him during the season. Well, now he's back in great shape again. So no, I'm very, very excited about Joe Barry's defense.
What are your thoughts, Jason? Take this wherever you want.
I'm ready to run through a wall. Like I said, the more we talk about this, the more excited I'm getting about this team. And I don't want to get too overly bought in because two straight NFC championship games, the odds are, the statistics will tell you that some sort of a regression is probably coming, which I hope is wrong. But I'm looking at a couple things. The first one is the Packers, if you look at just scoring defense last year, they were ranked 13th. So you have a top 15 defense. All right, they were just ahead of the Chicago Bears, by the way, with 369 points surrendered. But what I'm also looking at, too, is so for me, success is, and I know that this is lofty, it's a lot to ask, but move up three spots and be top 10. You've got the ascending guys, like Mark said, you've got players who should only be getting better and more experienced. Nobody's on the decline yet. And the other thing I'm looking at, too, is with a secondary like the Packers have, they only had 11 interceptions last year. They dropped a lot of balls. And make the joke about defensive backs and why they're not wide receivers, but they've got to get that total, I think, up closer to 20. If they want to be an elite defense, and there were a lot of marginal defenses last year that had 20-plus. So I think if they want to do that, it's going to have to be it sounds too simple and watered down, but keep the other guys out of the end zone and give the ball back to your offense. And then the Packers are going to be fine because even if they don't have the top offense in the NFL, I don't know if any of you were encouraged by the video of Aaron Rodgers tossing a football to the dudes in the boat, but A, he still got the distance, and B, he's still accurate. So when he reports to training camp, which may, by the way, not be on day one, that could be one of your burning questions, Paul, is will he show up on day one? I don't know. But get the ball back to this offense and let them do their thing. So that's the big thing. Get stingy. You know, get stingy. No, these mental errors just drive me nuts, and I think that has something to do with coaching. I'll be honest with you guys. I don't know a lot about Joe Barry. That's my biggest concern about a coordinator who doesn't have a real shining resume. And I know that guys are up and down and hot and cold and they do well. And you look at Greg Williams, for example, you know, with New Orleans, and then, you know, he turns into what he is and then he has some not so good seasons. That's the thing I'm worried about is can Joe Barry get these guys to buy in and focus so you don't have mental lapses like the end of the first half in the NFC Championship game, which we've harped on a ton, but that's the kind of stuff that drives us nuts. Those are the kind of things that kill the season. So can they get their heads on straight, be committed. Like I said, I want Kenny Clark coming in hungry. I want these guys to understand, like, if we don't go into Giannis mode, We're not going to win a championship. It's a perfect example. Go into Giannis mode every week and go out there and play hard. You're not going to win every game, but you've got to want it. And that's a part of it, is being mentally prepared. Take the ball away. Catch the ball, for crying out loud, Darnell Savage. Catch the ball. He's going to be a record-setting safety if he just catches everything that his hands touch. And then the Packers' defense is going to be really, really good. Top 10, I think, is a little bit of a lofty expectation. But look, they're already 13th. It's only three spots. So
that make the jump. That actually leads me into a follow-up question I had for you guys. What is the expectation? Like, if we use points per game, or I know DVOA is a big one too, as far as just overall performance, but I think we can say that under Mike Pettine, this wasn't a bad defense.
No,
yes,
not at all.
They had their moments, their lapses, but I think the reason that he was ultimately let go, more so than just the Kevin King play, was they didn't live up to expectations. Because Mark, you've hit the nail on the head here. You go through this defense, it is loaded with talent. And I understand, I think we all need to have patience early on, because this is a new defensive system. It's going to take some time for these guys with everything and getting their feet under them in it. But I think ultimately, whether it's, you know, over the course of the second half of the season, or at least in year two and three of the system, with these players, this should be a top 10 defense. So I don't think, Jason, your expectation of them becoming that, and like I said, the timeline, whether it's the second half or whenever, that can be fuzzy because it is a new system, but I don't think that's lofty whatsoever.
Well, fine then. If it's not in the first half, great. Then peak at the end of the season, which is exactly when you want to be playing your best football.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it, you know, this has, certainly has the makings of being, you know, if you want to go by points per game, you know, a top five, top 10 defense. And I think that's what they're shooting for, because you go through this defense and Mark's done it already. They are loaded with talent.
Yeah. I always go back. I was, when I covered the Eagles, and I know I always tell an Eagle story, but when I covered them for years, the one coach I got close with at the end was Jim Johnson, who was a great defense coordinator, unfortunately passed away way too soon. But we used to talk, and, you know, people throw stats out all the time. I've never been a stat guy. I watch what I think, you know. And they were ranked low in some areas one year, and people were making a big deal of it. And I remember talking to Jimmy. He's like, I don't care about those stats. He said, here's what I care about. Points, sacks, turnovers. I want to hold the opposing offense to 17 points or less every week. I want to get, you know, depending on like how many passes the team throws. He had a percentage of sacks that he wanted per pass play. He says that I want to win the turnover battle every week. We do that. I don't care how many rushing yards we give up. I don't care how many other things we give up. That mean nothing to me. Points, sacks, turnovers. Well, that's, you know, they were already pretty good in points last year. As Jason pointed out, the turnovers have to go up. But, you know, in the game the Packers lost, they did have three interceptions. The defense did come up with three interceptions against the greatest quarterback of all time.
As I was saying, give the ball back to the offense. That's what popped into my head. And I was like, I hope Mark's going to keep me honest here.
Well, they gave it back to the offense. And
offense didn't.
Down a quarterback.
Now, guys, I have to tell you, there was a replay on, and I never watch losses over, especially not playoff losses. But for whatever reason, I don't know why, it was at that point of the game where they had the ball. They're in at the goal line. They're in the red zone. I got to be honest with you guys. That play that we get on Rodgers for not running, I don't think he would have made it in.
If he would have got to the two or three.
I don't know about that, Mark. There were two guys. He could have, but there were two guys, and it's like, I think if anything, he maybe gets to the five, but that's still closer.
He would have gained more than the incomplete pass games.
That's correct.
Okay.
I haven't mustered up the strength to sit down and fully rewatch that one yet. So kudos to you, Jason, for having
that. It was just that one stretch. It just happened to be that one stretch of the game. I did not sit there and watch from the beginning. Oh, gotcha. I couldn't, but it just happened to be there. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch this again because I want to know if I can reconcile it in my mind that I thought that he had a better chance to run, but he really didn't. And it did. It looked like there were two guys there. It was like he a couple yards maybe, but you're right, Mark. It was one or two is more than zero.
Right. And he threw a terrible pass. wasn't it good? Like, he threw a great pass and got in.
Yeah, he was trying to throw it to Shaquille O'Neal. He threw it way too high.
Exactly. No, I mean, getting back to the – I don't want to – we'll talk about the quarterback another day. But, no, the defense – you know, people blame the defense. And you said they were – they got how many points last year? 369 or something? Is that what it was, Paul?
Yeah, 369.
Well, I know of at least 14 that came on special teams at two punt returns. Right? So that's not the defense.
Yep, that's a good point.
You know, we had a thing a couple weeks ago when we asked what concerns us the most. I'm telling you that this defense is as good as it's been in a long time. The offense should be, unless they really miss Corey Linsley, and they're going to miss him because he's a great player, but I think they made moves on the line. The offense is going to be very good. The only thing that my only worry is special teams, because and I hope it's better. It looks like they've tried to make it better, but that to me is the only flawed aspect of this team. And I don't want to sound like a homer, and you know, I know we're all Packer fans, but I've always tried to be somewhat objective, and I'm being objective now. Special teams is the only thing that I'm worried about.
I think you're absolutely right. In an off season that's long, it's easy to focus on what a team doesn't have. And the Green Bay Packers, they have a lot, as we've discussed. That was fun. I enjoyed getting your guys' answers and insights into those questions. So let's go around the horn. Mark, what do we got coming up over at Packer Report?
Okay, well, up there in the right now, I have a story about the wide receivers. I know everybody wanted this guy and that guy, and they should have drafted this. But when you look at this wide receiver room, they have a little bit of everything. And I kind of broke it down, just what they do have, and it's pretty good. And then coming up next week, I'm going to do some training camp battles that I'm going to be looking forward to going on Twitter to see how they're doing. And that was a joke. and then I'm going to do I have an Aaron Jones story coming too on just what he can accomplish in 2021.
Jason Perrone, Game On Wisconsin, is entering year two. What's going on?
Yeah, and listen, Mark, you are on Twitter. You just aren't the refresh guy, but you're on Twitter. You're on there.
I have to be. Yeah, I got.
I'll just start tagging you in all the buzz and stuff that I see.
Mark, to keep you up to date. No, listen. My complaint is I'm not anti. Well, social media. We could do a show on that too. But it's not that I don't go on Twitter. What I don't do is this is what I don't like, and I didn't do it when I wrote, and everybody else and my boss was like, why don't you do that? I'm like, because I don't do that. I don't put up, like, you know, after a wide receiver made a great catch, I don't put, oh, so-and-so made a great catch. And then 5 minutes later, oh, the same guy dropped the pass. I mean, I'll wait till the end of the practice to say this guy had his ups and downs. He made a great play here, but he dropped one here. And, you know, I don't think I have to give you this play-by-play on training camp. And I know some people do, and if they do, that's fine, and other people like to read it. I'll wait to the end of the day to judge the whole process, not every play. And, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I know I'm old, and maybe that's just how I think, but I don't need an every-minute update.
I, on the other hand, do need an every-minute update. Jason.
Jeez. And nothing is more challenging. I haven't watched basketball in 10 years. Nothing is more challenging than trying to keep up with that action. I mean, football is one thing when there's 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds between plays. But when it's a constantly moving ball, man, that's crazy. Yeah, Game On entering our second.
No, listen. No, Game. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm not in a game. Yeah, every play counts. I'm talking training camp practice. None of it really, you know.
Hey, Mark, you try to convince all however many people can fit in those stands. Paul, you tell us how many people can fit in the stands at training camp.
It's between 2,000 and 3,000.
Every single one of them cares a lot. And they should. And I mean, I'm saying it tongue in cheek. You're right. It doesn't matter because a lot of these guys aren't going to make the team. But they're the Oneida hero, and they've got to have their Jared Aberderis or their Jake Kumerow guy. And
that's what I'm saying. If Reggie Begelton, but I'm still not sure how to pronounce his name, and I like him. If he outplays Davante Adams on Wednesday, August 3rd, that doesn't mean anything. He's not beating out Davante Adams for his roster spot, okay?
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
So I don't want to hear that, oh, Davante Adams had a bad day today. Yeah, okay, so what?
Well, if he does beat Devontae Adams out, that means the Packers have both the number one and the number two wide receiver yeah, in the NFL. True.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Game On Wisconsin entering our second season in existence here. We're going to be kicking it off on Monday the 19th. So Quick Slants is going to bump to 2 days a week. It's going to come out on Mondays and Thursdays. I'll be going twice a week with Packers-related content. I'll be kicking it off on Monday, and I'm going to kind of sit back and see what's going on because, as you know, we never know what's going to happen leading up to training camp and what kind of buzz there might be about some other things. So I'll have a show. You know, Quick Slants, about 15 to 20 minutes, easy for your drive in or home from work. Definitely check that out, as well as the great work that the team is going to do over there once we relaunch the site and the written content starts up again.
So for me, I got a long form article discussing the linebacker unit, and then Friday at Cheesehead TV, just call it a brain dump. It's about 1,000 words on about 10, 12 different topics that I just had at the top of my head and wanted to discuss because it is the dead time of the season. Also, find me on Twitter at Paul_Brettel, and let me know if you're going to training camp because I will be there for a number of the days and would like to give you. Guys, anything else?
That's it. Go Pack, go, everybody. Be safe, as always.